Alrighty, 7:40 here on the Mighty 690. It's a Wednesday. That means we get to talk with folks from K-State Research and Extension's Wildcat District. And joining us, we have Wendy Palin and David Strantz. Good morning, ladies.
Good morning.
Oh, that was perfect. That was just right in unison. All right, well, we are going to start out with, first of all, any upcoming events that that we have on the way?
Interstate Fair is next week. Looking forward to that.
So what are you all going to be helping out, of course, with that, I'm sure?
I have a couple of duties. I'll be helping with the livestock judging on Friday, and then I believe it's maybe Monday or Tuesday we do inside exhibits.
Yeah, so Monday is when the inside exhibits for all the 4-H kids are checked in and judged, and they do a bake sale for those kids that evening, so all the kids that get grand or reserve champion or purple ribbon on their baked good, they get to auction it off that evening. And then those will be in the building until Thursday if you want to take some time and walk through and look at them.
Okay. Hey, that's some good stuff. Very exciting. Hard to believe that it's almost here. So very good on that. Well, I'm going to start off with you today, Wendy, talking a little bit of a topic that I know is near and dear to your heart, hay storage.
Yes, it is. As I drive around, I see so many rows of hay that are round side to round side and tucked up under the edge of trees to be out of the way so that if we get enough rain, then that hay field can be harvested again. And it breaks my heart knowing how much that hay is going to deteriorate in quality. Being under the edge of the tree, being round side to round side, is just going to collect moisture. And so I thought maybe we would go ahead and have a chat about that today.
Okay. So yeah, now that is that's a very interesting. And you mentioned the well, we'll get into the trees here in a little bit, because that's kind of opposite of what I was thinking. So what should we know to start off with here as we talk about hay storage?
Yeah. So let's just work from the ground up. So you want to work with a mostly dry base. So if you've got a space where you can pour some concrete, and that would be your haste. If you aren't going to store inside, let me back up. Inside storage is ultimate best. But most folks around here don't have that capability. So we'll just move on to the bullet points of outside storage. So keeping the base dry is the main thing. If you can pour a concrete pad and that be your forever hay stack, hay pin, whatever you want to call it, then that's the best thing to do. But that can kind of be expensive for some setup there. So anything like crushed rock, old tires, pallets, railroad ties. I know in our neck of the woods, we've got lots of railroad construction going on right now. So putting those railroad ties down will give that surface the ability to drain when we get moisture, to keep those bales as dry as possible. So we really want those bales up out of the soil. The other thing to keep them dry, if you aren't able to store them inside, putting a tarp over them is nearly as good as a building. So you can put a tarp over just the row, or if you're stacking in like a pyramid style, then that decreases your tarp surface area. But of course you have to be able to get the hay that high up. Some folks will do like three across at the bottom, and then two, and then one single bale at the very top. So you've got a nice little pyramid, but you have to have that specialized equipment to get it that high, and then to get it back down to feed it. So whenever you are formulating your rows, you want to put your flat side to flat side, so the end to end. You don't want to put the rounded sides together, because that it just creates a crevice there for moisture just to sit, especially when snow is falling. Think about that. It'll just kind of drift, pile up right there in that crack. So you want to do your end-to-end and get those as close together as possible to keep out the moisture. Some things to consider whenever you're locating your space for your hay pen or your hay storage area. If it's on a slope, you want to make for sure your rows are oriented down the slope. And so if you think of like a terrace in a crop field, we have those terraces that catch water. And so it would be the same idea with our hay bales. You want to make sure that water is able to flow out of the rows.
You don't want them becoming like kind of a block to that water.
Exactly.
And catching it all and soaking it up.
Exactly. Yeah. That hay bale is just going to wick up as much moisture as it possibly can because it's dry hay. So you want to orient your rows down the slope. But if you're working with a flat surface, or especially if you have a slope where you can orient your bale rows north to south, that's ideal because that's when it's going to catch the best sunlight during the day, especially in the winter when the sun's low. So the airflow through those rows is important. We want to make for sure they're at least 3 foot apart, not only so we can get in there between them with our equipment, but to make for sure that there's enough space for a breeze to move through. I have seen, like I mentioned earlier, the bales round side to round side. And the point of that is for easy pickup whenever you have like a Dewey's squeeze bale bed and you're wanting to go pick those bales up and just take off to feed the cows or feed the livestock. It's easiest just to pick it up from those flat sides already oriented in your hay pen. However, if that is your necessity, then maybe consider separating those bales 18 inches from each other. So you're not stacking round side to round side touching, but giving them a little bit of space so that the water can go ahead and drain off like the roundness of the bale is intended for.
I did
for
see
it.
Someone doing that the other day where they did have about, that 18 inch or so separation of the bales.
Excellent, yes. So I do see the point of doing those round side to round side simply for ease of transportation whenever we're doing our winter feeding, but definitely give them some space to breathe there. So going back to those trees, we use trees to block wind in our cow pastures and things like that. We also know that whenever it rains, then you stand under a tree after it's done raining and you're still going to get drops on you, right? When the breeze blows just a little bit. So that tells us that the moisture and the air does not flow through those trees as cleanly as we need them to do. And whenever we're storing hay, we want to keep it as dry as possible to keep that quality up. So storing our bales under the tree line for a long period of time is defeating the purpose there. So oftentimes we just need to get the bales off of the hay field and we're not ready to haul them to their final point before feeding. But if you can, don't store them your permanent hay pen under trees or where the wind is going to be blocked if you've got, buildings or whatever. Keep them in as much airflow as possible. That's the idea there.
See that, and that's interesting because, you'd think that, a tree's kind of like a poor man's cover. It'll keep it dry, right?
But yeah. It really just keeps it wetter.
Yep.
Yep.
Now, when after we, do our cutting and everything, obviously there's still going to be some moisture and that sort of thing. So that's why we're really trying to maximize that drying out. Kind of like if you think about curing wood or mm-hmm. that sort of thing, right?
Yep, absolutely. So the drier it's harvested, then the less risk you have with the quality deteriorating. And also, even if it's harvested a little bit wet, and some folks will see that hay has caramelized, if you drill through those bales for a forage sample, that hay is going to be sweeter smelling, and it's going to be more of a brown color rather than that fresh dried green color. And cows love that. They love that caramelization. However, it's the first indication that the quality is tanking. Mm. So the nutrients in there are burning up. So it might be tastier. It's kind of like on your steak. Whenever you grill it and you get that really crispy piece that's been flame broiled or whatever, it's really tasty, but it doesn't have near the nutrients in it that inside part does.
Gotcha.
So keep that in mind whenever you are putting the bales together. Monitor that moisture in there. South Dakota has done a study, and so they looked at all the different ways that hay has been stored, or some of the different ways. I suppose there's probably a million different ways. But when bales are stored end to end, flat side to flat side, then for 1 year, there was a 1% dry matter loss, which means those bales were 1% wetter after the year when they were stored end to end. But whenever the bales are stored separately, you know, like we're talking about those round side to round side, 18 inches between, then those bales had a 4% loss. So they were 4% more wet at the end of that year. But that pyramid storage, this is what surprises me. The pyramid storage has a 10% dry matter loss. And that simply comes down to airflow between the levels of the pyramid. So your top bale, sure, it's nice and dry, drier than what you'll be able to get in a single row. But those, the second and third levels, there's no air flowing in between there, so the moisture just sticks around. So that is a really high loss. So if you're going to do a pyramid stack, it definitely needs to be tarped. So South Dakota also has this, they've put out this really nice fact sheet, and I found it fascinating. It's very colorful. If anybody would like to discuss it with me, I'd be happy to. So they took all these different orientations of bale storage and considered these different orientations and sampled the bales and moisture. And sure enough, anytime you stack a bale in with another bale, you're going to have more problems. So a lot of times, I don't see it often around here, but I have seen it before occasionally. They'll put a bale marshmallow side, you know, the flat side's on the ground.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, does that make sense?
Yep.
Flat side's on the ground, so the top of the bale is flat, and then they can put another round bale on the top of that.
Okay.
And so that way, the idea of that storage style is to protect that top bale, to keep it as dry as possible, and then to sacrifice the bottom bale. But what ends up happening is the sacrifice is simply too great if the precipitation is too much that year, which we hope we have some precipitation. So yes, your top bale that's sitting on another bale is sure nice and dry, but that bottom bale sitting flat end on the ground just wicks up so much moisture that it's not worth the quality of that lower bale to keep that higher bale dry. So if you've got some sort of lower quality hay that you don't mind that quality deteriorating even more, and you have a high quality hay like a sedan grass or a fertilized Bermuda, even alfalfa, that you want to really protect, that would be where that could be utilized. Turn your old bale on its flat side, put your new, fresh, high nutritious bale on the top of that. So that's one strategy there to make that useful. There's so many different considerations whenever we're putting bales into storage, but the thing to remember is allowing the roundness of the bale to do its job and letting airflow in there. The tighter the bale is wrapped, the more dense that grass is inside there, the easier it's going to shed moisture. So lots of different things to consider. But you certainly want to keep the quality up. If you're going through the trouble of all the harvesting of forage, you want to be able to get that nutrition to the cows.
Is there any control that we really have on that tightness when, you know, we're actually baling?
Absolutely. Each baler is going to be different, and each type of grass is different, or legume, or anything that you're baling. So, of course, your bales are going to be heavier if the forage is wetter, but it's important to get that dried down so that it doesn't caramelize like I had talked about.
Mm-hmm.
So heavier forages are like your sedan grass, anything that's real thick and can be stemmy. But your baler can still pack all of that in there and then net wrap it. So oftentimes our bales weigh between 850 and 1250. You know, not quite a ton, but I have seen bales that are up there closer to that ton.
Oh, my.
Which it all depends on your system.
Sure.
You know, if you have transportation for that 1-ton bale to get it from.
For it.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. Because then you won't have to put out as much hay.
Yeah.
And it will shed the moisture easier.
Last longer, less work for you.
That's right. But hauling it, you don't want to damage any of your equipment.
Yep, you got to have the big stuff on that. So.
Yes.
All right. Well, that's a good update, Wendy. I know still lots of haying happening right now, and it's that time of year, so we're trying to get as much as we possibly can banked up here.
Yes.
Around the area, have you seen, just kind of comparing this year with last year, I know we were really hurting for hay near the tail end of last year. Any thoughts on how we're doing as compared with last year?
Yeah, so quality-wise, we're kind of low simply because last year we harvested grass that didn't get to replenish its root system as quickly as it should have. So we're a little low on quality this year, but quantity, we're doing okay. Prices are still pretty high. Folks are anticipating a rough winter, and so prices are similar to what we were seeing last year. And I don't really see that changing.
Sure. All righty. Well, good update there, Wendy. And David will be up next. And what's your topic today, David?
I'm going to be talking about getting goats and sheep ready for breeding season.
Hey, there we go. Lots of seasons coming up. So good stuff on that. So we will be checking in with Dave in here and getting that update in a few moments right after the news. So we do have 73 degrees right now in Coffeyville, and we are heading up to a high today in the upper 80s. Keep here on the Mighty 690. We have a check of news coming up. Back here on the Mighty 690 at 8:10. And David Strauss joins us now with another topic here. A little bit different than hay. You know, we all like hay, but, you know, animals eat hay. And we do want to talk about sheep and goats getting ready for breeding season, right?
Yeah. Traditionally, fall is breeding season for sheep and goats. Sheep and goats have a 5-month gestation period. So if you breed them in the fall, they'll be kidding in the spring, which is traditionally the time we think of those kids and lambs bouncing around in the springtime. So the first thing you want to do is decide when you want your goats or sheep to be kidding and lambing within that spring time frame, if that's what you're shooting for. Because there's a little bit of difference in Southeast Kansas between January and, say, March and April. So one thing to consider is the type of shelters you have. If you maybe have a fully enclosed barn where you can bring all the does in to kid if you are kidding in January and we get some of the extremely cold weather and snow. Or if you more just have shelters out in the pasture, maybe you want to wait until March when it's usually a little bit warmer. We don't have as much of a chance of that severe winter weather. Another consideration when you're thinking about what time you want your lambs and kids to be born is when and how you want to market those kids and lambs. Traditionally, for sheep and goats, they get the highest prices right before Easter. And then a little bit farther into the spring, based on the ethnic holidays, and those holidays, the dates change a little bit every year along with when Easter falls every year. So you're going to want to double check those dates so you can have a good idea of what market you're shooting for. That's another consideration. If they're born in January or February, you're going to be fighting the weather a little bit more, and it is probably going to be a little bit more labor intensive on you being out there making sure those kids and lambs are staying warm and dry during the colder weather, but they'll be heavier when you sell them for that Easter market. So that is a pretty good return on your time investment, and you'll see a little bit higher price as well. So once you've decided, you know, when you want to put the buck in to breed your goats and or your sheep, the next thing to decide is like breeding groups. So as you break them down into breeding groups, because if you do put just say one buck with 20 to 30 does, for example, you're going to have a pretty drawn out kidding window. So the next thing you want to consider is if you're okay with that drawn out kidding window, because you'll have, you know, a few kidding here and there, not as many as once. Or if you want a tighter window, so you kind of have a really busy couple of weeks, but then you're done with kidding for the spring. And as you're going through and you're getting, you know, your does ready for breeding season, maybe you're breaking them up into smaller groups or moving them to a different pasture, it's a good time to evaluate them. So trim their hooves if they need their hooves trimmed, deworm any that need to be dewormed, and then also check their body condition score, so how much fat cover they have, because if they're on the skinny side, now's a good time to start supplementing them with some grain to help them get a little bit more condition and increase the chances of them having twins or maybe even triplets. When they're thinner, they're not as likely to have multiple births. Now, on the flip side, if you happen to have one that is really heavy, is carrying a little bit of extra weight, now is a good time to put them on a diet. So hopefully they lose a little bit of that weight before they're turned in with the buck, because if they are too heavy or too light, both reduces their chances of being bred and successfully kidding in the spring.
And now, and twins are fairly common in both sheep and goats, or is one or the other?
Yes, in both sheep and goats, twins are the most common. Triplets are fairly common as well. Personally, I really prefer twins. Twins always do pretty good. They're usually both, you know, a decent size without being too big. If you get a single, you run the risk of it being a big single and the doe having trouble giving birth, and you might have to assist her and pull the kid. Where twins, usually they're, you know, a good size, both of them are. Where triplets, sometimes you get the smaller one out of the three and you have to supplement one. And then sometimes quads isn't unheard of either. So multiple births are very common. And also before breeding season, it's really important to take a good look at your buck or your ram and make sure they're ready to go. Sometimes they get kind of forgotten about a little bit, just because the focus is on the does and the ewes, you know, in the spring during kidding and lambing, and then you're focused on those kids and lambs and getting them weaned and sold. So a couple weeks before you want to turn your ram or your buck in, look over him as well, trim his hooves, deworm him if he needs to be dewormed, and then also start feeding him some supplemental feed. So if he's just on pasture and his body condition's good, he's a good weight, he doesn't need to gain any weight, that could be just giving him some good quality hay so he gets a little bit extra, or grain is also a really good supplement to give him before and during breeding season, because they're going to be burning off more energy than they have been the last couple of months, and you want to make sure that they're getting plenty of food.
Now, do a lot of people keep a buck around, or do they bring in one, like they can, you know, borrow, or, you know, have one come in?
Yeah, a lot of people keep their own buck or ram around. Some people, if they have a smaller herd, or maybe a 4-H or FFA member just has a couple as a breeding project, then they'll rent or borrow a buck or ram, and sometimes they'll take the buck or the ram to their house and put them in with their does or ewes for a couple weeks, or they'll take the does over to the breeder who has the bucks. And if you're doing something like that, it's really important to Make sure that the buck you're borrowing is in good health, comes from a healthy herd, doesn't show any signs of disease, because there are a few diseases in sheep and goats that can be transferred at breeding. So just make sure that you're using one from a reputable breeder, someone you're familiar with who has healthy livestock, and of course that your does are healthy and don't show any signs of being sick.
Sure, I could think that might be a little bit more of a concern, just the fact that, you know, genetically having a lot of twins and that sort of thing, problems could kind of be passed down that sort of way.
Yeah, and the other thing to think of when you're maybe choosing a buck to use on your does or a ram on your ewes is if you have smaller does or smaller ewes, you want to use a smaller buck or a smaller ram. You might even ask the birth weight of that buck's kids on average, or if they don't, you know, weigh every kid, just general size. Like, hey, does he usually throw, you know, large singles, or are twins more common? Especially if you have does or ewes that are going to be kidding or lambing for the first time. They're usually a little bit more prone to needing assistance anyways. And if you have miniature goats, like Nigerian dwarf goats or those smaller breeds, you want to breed them to a similar breed. You don't want to breed them, you know, to a boar buck or a standard size buck, because then that's really asking for trouble spring.
Sure, that totally makes sense. Well, anything else that people should know as we I hate to say it, cruise on into fall, but it is not too far away.
The other important reminder to think about for breeding season and as you get ready for spring is keeping good records. So keeping track of, which ram you put in with which group of ewes. That way, if you're keeping track of birth weight, which I always like to keep track of, because then that helps you keep track of how fast those lambs grow as well. Or if, you know, you have any issues or you notice a big difference in conformation, it will give you an idea if maybe that's just the year or maybe it's genetics related to the ram you used with those ewes.
Sure. Yep. Keeping some of your own data sets there can really be helpful in the long run, even though I know sometimes it's not what we all like to do.
Exactly.
It can definitely go a long way. So anything else you want to share on this topic, David?
I think that's all for now.
Okay. Hey, very good. Well, that's some good information. And of course, I know we're all looking forward to the Interstate Fair and Rodeo on the way, and going to be some good, exciting stuff there. So, David, if people have questions for you on this or any topic, what's the best way to get a hold of you there?
Yeah, they can get a hold of me by calling the Independence office. That number is 620-331-2690.
All right. And Wendy, if people have questions for you on our topic of hay or anything else related to livestock production, what's the best way to get hold of you?
Yeah, they can give me a call at the Altamont office, 620-784-5337.
All right. Well, thank you, ladies. Appreciate it. And look forward to chatting again here real soon.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And we have a early bird edition of Open Line on the way here on KGGF+. We'll be chatting with Candy Westbrook. That's coming up.